This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Mayor Chris Koos of Normal says a couple of no votes from council members on his appointment to the Connect Transit Board is pure politics.
Where is the problem? Where is my troublesome appointee? Where have mayors in Bloomington Normal around the area made bad decisions on that? All of a sudden now it's an issue.
Plus, a new techie tool can help older Americans stay in their homes longer. Ryan Denham reports the innovation comes from a big Bloomington insurance company. The first tenured black professor at Lincoln College tells her stories of fighting against discrimination and institutional racism in our series Living Black in Bloomington Normal. And Bloomington City Manager Tim Gleason offers a snapshot of economic damage to city finances from the pandemic. All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. County officials are concerned about delayed results from Bloomington's coronavirus testing site, which saw a record 405 people Monday. Results are promised within 4 to 7 days, but McLean County Board Member Carlo Robustelli says he has heard from constituents it has taken longer than that. He has been waiting for his own results over a week. He says that's concerning because results are key to contact tracing.
It doesn't give me a lot of confidence in the infrastructure we're trying to build here. When that happened,
Robustelli spoke at a county board health committee meeting. Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight says she'll look into the problem. McLean County has its first COVID-19 death since May. County Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight says a woman in her 70s died after contracting the virus. McKnight says the woman was in good health before showing COVID-19 symptoms, but recently traveled out of state.
Well, what we know is that, like many of our cases that we're seeing, related to travel, so out-of-state travel.
McLean County has had 14 COVID-19 deaths. 10 are tied to a Bloomington nursing home. A Bloomington man says he's being evicted because he hung a Black Lives Matter banner from his apartment balcony. Donovan Burton acknowledges he's in breach of his lease with First Sight, which limits what you can put on your balcony.
You're absolutely not being consistent because all the lease states is there's no personal items on the balcony. Everyone else is allowed to have personal items, and you're just singling out one personal item.
Burton says he was moved to do something after George Floyd's killing in Minneapolis. He's multiracial, as is his infant son. Burton still refuses to take down the banner. Last week, First Sight served him with a 10-day notice that eviction was next. Governor J.B. Pritzker has signed a pair of bills into law designed to make it a bit easier for patients to qualify for Medicaid and give doctors a bump in pay for treating low-income patients. The law renews the state's hospital assessment program, where facilities pay a tax per bed to generate federal matching money for troubled hospitals. The measure also removes some of the red tape that can prevent people from qualifying for assistance. For the first time in about 3 decades, doctors will receive more money for treating those on Medicaid. That comes at a time fewer doctors accept Medicaid patients. Lawmakers hope the new rules will encourage the medical community to treat the poor as Medicaid numbers grow from pandemic-related unemployment. Governor J.B. Pritzker recently put more than $50 million of his own money into a campaign to convince voters to support a graduated income tax. The change requires a constitutional amendment, which is on the November ballot. Now, business groups are starting their campaign to defeat the proposal. The groups say the amendment that raises taxes on wealthier residents would also hurt businesses and therefore employees. Todd Mache, president of the Illinois Chamber of Commerce, says the change would be a windfall for governments in times of an economic downturn.
This is simply a big, giant bag of cash that's being left at the back door of the State House and City Hall. That's all this is.
Supporters of the amendment say it will lead to a fairer tax, with low-income residents paying less. The backers have started running digital ads to pass. 60% of voters would have to approve it. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement has placed new restrictions on international students planning to attend universities in the U.S. this fall. The news comes as universities and colleges formulate plans to reopen amid the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Lee Gaines has more.
According to the new rules from ICE, international students cannot take a full online course load and remain in the U.S., and the universities that enroll them will have to certify that they're taking as few online classes as possible if they want to legally live in the country. And if their school only offers online courses, they'll have to transfer to another that allows face-to-face instruction or leave the country. The University of Illinois' Urbana campus has one of the highest percentages of international students in the nation. A spokesperson for the U of I says they're reviewing the guidance from ICE and will contact affected international students directly. I'm Lee Gaines.
Illinois State University typically has 400 to 500 international students each year. A spokesperson says ISU is also reviewing the new guidance. And the pandemic has caused the cancellation of another of the big annual Bloomington Normal events. Last week, the coronavirus muted 4th of July celebrations in central Illinois. Now the Bloomington Normal Trades and Labor Assembly says the annual Labor Day parade won't happen either. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM, WGLT, and WGLT.org. The town of Normal got some bad news about state funding from the Connect Transit general manager and made an appointment to the Connect Transit board. The mayors of Bloomington and Normal join us on Sound Ideas the day after most council meetings. Today, that's Mayor Chris Koos of Normal. Connect Transit general manager Isaac Thorne says the bus service for Bloomington Normal may have to use all its federal CARES Act money to replace state funding that might not happen this year because of the pandemic. Is that the appropriate place for the state to make up some of the current $1.1 billion drop in revenue compared to last year?
I think it is an appropriate place to use it to keep the system moving. That's a major funding source for Connect Transit, 65% of their budget. Isaac Thorne did say that it may be a cut. They just didn't know. So they're being cautious in holding those dollars that they can use for capital and operations so that they've got a viable service going forward.
COVID-19 cases are rising again across the nation, even in Illinois, which had a stronger than average response to the pandemic early on. Federal health officials say the first wave of the virus is in effect continuing. It's not just really a surge. So hopes of a return to economic normalcy were already pretty faint, and they're fading faster. Will the town be in a position to preserve transit service when CARES Act money runs out at the end of the fiscal year, and if the state still has no ability to restore funding?
Well, I think, that's going to be dependent on our state and federal partners going forward. As a system standalone funded by the town of Normal and the city of Bloomington, the answer to that would be, of course not. It would not be able to function in that environment. It depends on our partnership with the state and federal government to keep that moving.
How about the town? What are staff and council members talking about as measures to adjust to longer-term economic suppression that the pandemic is creating?
We still are being very conservative in our budgeting and predicting about a 10% decrease in revenues. You know, early on there has been some bright spots, but we're not convinced that they will stay bright in the long term. So we're very, very concerned about that. We may have to take additional steps in terms of reduced funding scenarios, and we'll address that as they come.
What are possible items on the menu of not-so-good choices in that event?
I wouldn't call it a menu because we haven't done that. We've talked around it. It could be things like cutting some of the services that we do, which we already did. We didn't hire any seasonal part-timers this year. We're trying to do everything in-house, not opening the swimming pools. It will save us in the neighborhood of $400,000 to $500,000 this year, things like that. If it gets worse, we're going to have to dig deeper.
The council has approved Tim McHugh as the new town appointee to the Connect Transit Board. He's in ISU students and housing areas. He also has a background in accessibility and in people with disabilities. We'll talk about the process, but first, why is your appointee, McHugh, a good person for what we should note as unpaid volunteer service on that body?
Well, Mr. McHugh came on my radar from the service he did with bike and pedestrian plan. He volunteered to be on that committee, and I started hearing good things about him in his involvement in that committee. I took that to heart and had a conversation with him. I also had a scenario where one of my business ex-employees now works for Tim, so I kind of vetted how that relationship was, and it came back with very, very strong recommendations from that person. That, combined with the conversations that I had with him and conversations that he had with a Connect Transit board member, I thought that was the right pick.
Council members Karen Smith and Stan Nord said they were uncomfortable about the selection process. They didn't know much about McHugh, hadn't met him. In Nord's case, the comment was that he refused a rubber stamp. Now, most appointees are just that, a rubber stamp. The council generally doesn't want to get bogged down in every single appointment, and there are a lot of them.
So, yeah, I wouldn't call it a rubber stamp. It's more of it's advice and consent. It's affirming that the mayor has the authority and made a pick. It is hard right now to get people to volunteer for these boards and commissions. And if we go to a situation where they have to go through a public interview process by seven different people that may not be in agreement on it, it's going to make it even harder for people. And so the other side of the coin for me is, what's the problem you're trying to fix? And in this situation, I will tell you, it's all political. This is a political issue going into Connect Transit issues. There are people that have very strong opinions, so they want somebody on the board that reflects exactly their issue. That's not a good board appointment, in my opinion.
So when a board or panel becomes a hot button in the community, often a mayor will quietly and informally vet the nominee with council members as a way of heading off the kind of thing that happened the other evening. Did you do that in this case?
I did not.
All right. Should you?
As a tradition in my community, in communities all over the United States, boards and commission appointments are an executive decision. I told people that I had an appointment. I talked to some council members, and they were fine with the appointment. This is an executive appointment. This is how it's been done for 50 years in our community. Where is the problem? Where is my troublesome appointee? Where have mayors in Bloomington Normal around the area made bad decisions on that? All of a sudden now it's an issue. And again, it's a political issue. It has nothing to do with the process, in my opinion.
Town of Normal Mayor Chris Goose, thanks for joining us on Sound Ideas.
Glad to be with you, always.
I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is WGLT, Bloomington Normal's Public Media. You're listening to Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. A new smart speaker tool called Sundial aims to help older adults stay in their homes with help from their families. But what's even more interesting than the tool itself is who made it? State Farm. Sundial is a homegrown project from within State Farm's innovation team. For a monthly fee, older adults can use their Alexa-enabled devices to access shared calendars, lists, even photos with family members from afar. Mike Fields is president of Sundial Labs. He tells Ryan Denham why an insurance company spent as much making a product that doesn't sell insurance.
This is a segment that's growing. If you look at 2030 as the year, you know, nearly 20 million Americans will be 80 or older. You have that older segment or aging segment of 50 and older. 3 out of 4 want to age in their home, stay as close to home as possible. And then you couple that with their support circle is moving away. There's a little bit of distance from a little bit to a lot, and they still want to stay connected to that family member.
Yeah, can you help our listeners get a better understanding of how Sundial Labs fits into the broader array of State Farm companies?
Yeah, for nearly 100 years, State Farm's invested in innovation. State Farm, as a company, has doubled down or increased our investment in what we call State Farm Labs. And State Farm Labs is looking at, you know, between 6 and 12 new products that we could bring to market and test. Some of those are going to be small, some are going to be large. And what happened is we developed this, we incubated it, which is our process, and we saw that the market was growing and there was a need. And Sundial Labs was an entity that we formed out of that to have complete focus on this segment be really dedicated to that and have team structures around that, while State Farm's innovation engine keeps looking for the next thing to serve customers.
So I'm understanding it correctly that Sundial then was sort of homegrown, born out of State Farm innovation. It wasn't like an outside company that was acquired or anything and then brought in.
Yeah, this is grown from within. We got input from our early test on what would be a resonating name, and we use some of our own ways of selecting a name, but this is not an acquired firm. It's grown from within.
Gotcha. So with that name, Sundial Labs, and the word labs suggests to me that this is one service that Sundial will offer among many. Is that the case, or are there going to be other things under the sort of the Sundial umbrella that roll out over time?
We see a big runway for this. And so we started with the things that we could bring to market. Think of, you hear a lot about agile and bringing stuff and letting customers help you drive it. But we have a lot more capabilities we want to bring forward. And that'll be steered by what the customers are telling us and what's of value and what isn't. We've done a lot of research, but we always want to validate it with customer input.
You know, State Farm is in many ways, a traditional insurance company with a big network of agents. You know, you spend a lot on traditional advertising. So why is it doing a service like this? Why is it offering a smart speaker app skill, you know, for older adults in this way? How does Sundial sort of fit in very big picture strategically?
If you look at what we're doing, is we're trying to help with the everyday things that happen in people's lives, all customers. So we have a great agent network that's doing that with insurance and financial services, looking for that way to protect and extend our value chain there, protect the customer and extend value through that. And we looked at this segment and it really resonates with what we're trying to help with, you know, middle America, bring value and to help them with everyday things going on. There's great synergy, but there's a lot of different ways to develop different understanding of what the market needs. And so we just took a different route here to see and grow this. And while our agents are really focused on a lot of what's going on and how to keep that value and make sure we keep our customers safe and secure in that way.
So what is your sense of how much State Farm is doing on innovation versus your peers in the industry? You know, are you spending enough, hiring enough, you know, where you want to be on that front?
From my perspective, constraint brings great ideas. So I feel like we're funded well. We have good guidance from our senior-most leaders, but we also have freedom to steer where we need to go and develop these ideas. And if every idea we feel is going to be a home run, we're not really stretching ourselves enough. So we have some ideas we've had to pivot off of. And that process has felt really good because we're doing good by saying, hey, that's not something our customers want, and we're getting support for that rather than just force it. And as I look at the industry, you could always invest more. You know, we're not really a traditional R&D shop where you have manufacturing R&D, but I see us doing really good things and being funded.
Gotcha.
If you look at the insurance industry, very well.
That's Mike Fields, Vice President of Sundial Labs, a State Farm company. He spoke to Ryan Denham. Learn more at sundial-labs.com. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The first black tenured professor at Lincoln College says the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis police custody led to some difficult conversations with colleagues, friends, and her children. Janine Peacher says she has lost friends who do not understand the rage and loss that sparked looting after the Floyd killing. In this conversation for WGLT's series Living Black in Bloomington Normal, Peacher talks with student reporter Darnisha Mitchell. Peacher says friends and colleagues from diverse backgrounds simply don't understand.
You know, I have had people reach out to me, my non-white friends, my non-white colleagues reach out to me and basically just say, you know, I have no idea what it's like, what you are experiencing. I am the mother of two young African-American males. They are in college. My fear, some of my trepidation, some of my anxiety, they try to understand, but I guarantee you some of the same conversations that we've had with our sons are not the same ones that they've had with their sons. And for the ones who reached out to me, they made an attempt. I came across their mind. They thought about me, and I was very appreciative of that.
How has systemic racism impacted your life?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you can't be black and say you have never experienced it. You know, being right here in Lincoln, Illinois, at Lincoln College, where just until recently have we sort of had an influx, a few more people of color to join our faculty. But, you know, systemic racism for me was just a way of life in Texas. There were stores that we could not go into. There were parts of town that we could not go into. There were conditions at our school. And I think it has sort of been the impetus behind why I have devoted so many years of my life to higher ed, so that, you know, I help students to understand and prepare them for the world that awaits them. Many of them coming from our inner city Chicago schools will say, well, I haven't encountered it. But I think when they begin to see, you know, how ill-equipped they were for college, I think many of them began to see that that was systemic, that some of the funding was not funneled to their school. So it has just been so much a part of me. I don't know, it kind of sparks a nerve every time I think about it.
Has it ever came to moments where racism impacted how you view yourself?
How I viewed myself, without a doubt. You begin to question your craft. It definitely shakes your self-confidence. In one way, it can cause you to close the door and have a moment. And then it has caused you to just dig really deep and just say, you know, I am forging ahead for those that have to come behind me.
You mentioned how you and your husband are having conversations with your two sons about racism. Mm-hmm. What does that conversation look like?
Our conversations have been, we want you to come home. As it relates to police brutality, it's you comply and then we'll complain later. One of the hardest things that my youngest one asked us, and it stumped us, and I don't have an answer then, and I really don't have one now, but he asked us, now, we do everything you tell us to do, and we still don't come home. What happens if we do all of that, and it doesn't really matter? For a moment, your heart stops. You turn and you look at your spouse of 24 years, and you go, how do you answer that? Today, we can give him an answer, because he's absolutely correct. We teach them what to do, what to say, how to act, and what if that's not enough? What if somebody still feels like their lives are not worth it? So we continue to teach them to be good men. Now, society will then begin to see you in a different light. And the only thing you can do is be your true, authentic self. But you're never really prepared for it until it happens. Both of them, unfortunately, have heard someone use the N-word on them. That conversation was quite emotional. You know, why would call me that? I thought we were friends, so probably too young. I didn't want them to experience it at that age, but unfortunately, that's not going to be the last time.
Janine Peacher is a professor at Lincoln College and an Illinois State University graduate. She talked with WGLT student reporter Darnisha Mitchell for the WGLT series Living Black in Bloomington Normal. Find all the series interviews and stories at WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM, WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media. The pandemic has not hit Bloomington City finances as hard as first feared. Eric Stock has more.
Bloomington City Manager Tim Gleason says it was hard to know at first how the pandemic would change consumer habits.
We didn't know if grocery stores were going to have more restrictions than what they had. So what we're finding in our sales tax revenue and some of the other revenues is that the consumers, you know, still did spend.
Gleason says hardware stores seemed to do well as people had more time for home improvement projects while they sheltered at home.
So while this has still been a negative financial impact to the city, what we are seeing is that it's not at that 50% reduction mark on the projected revenue losses. We're doing better than that.
Gleason says curbside service helped many businesses while their doors remained closed, and expanded outdoor dining that enables bars and restaurants to take in more customers during the shutdown will last beyond the pandemic.
And that totally has been done by design, where we did this, but we also figured that there was going to be such outpouring of support that this could be a long-term change, permanent change for the downtown, and I think you'll see that.
Still, Gleason says the city's COVID-19 losses are in the $2.5 million range so far. The city projected up to a $10 million shortfall for the budget year, but he says the city also has to prepare for a second wave of COVID-19 in the fall. For the leadoff, I'm Eric Stock.
Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible with listener contributions at WGLT.org. Our website is also where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories, which today came from Ryan Denham, Eric Stock, and student reporter Darnisha Mitchell. I'm Charlie Schlenker.